Yeah, it's like eliminating that scarcity mindset, I think. Like, how I see it is like, there is this table, this metaphorical table, and like, everyone has a seat at it. You just bring your own like ingredients, whatever, your own foods, whatever, and you create that. Or you can just fuck the table and create your own table elsewhere, you know what I mean?
Hello everyone and welcome to Chai with Rai, a life and culture podcast diving into the mindset and business of being a creative. I am your host Rai, and each week I bring you a guest or a fruitful message from the creative industry, all while sipping and spilling some hot chai. Now if you haven't done so, make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. If you love this podcast and are listening to this on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audible, or wherever you are streaming your podcast from, if you could do me a kind favor and make sure to rate the podcast down below and share it on your stories, on the WhatsApps, on social, and spread the word. It organically grows the show and connects us with listeners who haven't tuned in before, and overall, as I always say, it just shares the love. So spread it on your iMessage, spread it on your family groups, just spread it. Also, if you haven't done so already, you can now become a patron, aka a supporter of Chai with Rai, by signing up on Patreon for £5, or as I love saying it in this accent, $5.50 each month. Your subscription will help support the show, but also get you exclusive behind-the-scenes footages and some extra juicy things. I'll put the link for the Patreon channel, as well as all of the other links mentioned in this episode, in the description of the episode, so make sure to check that out. So last year, I released an 8-episode short audio storytelling series on Chai with Rai called Symphonies of Beaded Threads. Each of these stories had a different genre, their own theme, their own voice, and a style. Now this is going to be following that. As most of you know, one of the things that is the heart of Chai with Rai is storytelling and the minds behind it. So this is going to be a conversation with the writers who wrote those pieces. P.S. I will make sure to put in the bio of this episode the link to their stories, so make sure to check those out. But as of right now, let's warm up our delicious cuppas and let's dive into a fabulous conversation, a juicy conversation with writer Yasmin Dankwa, who wrote the short story, An Epic As Told by My Grandma's Photo Album, available to stream now on Chai with Rai. Well, welcome to the podcast. And before we get into it and we talk about the industry, which is one of our favorite conversations to have all the time whenever we get together and we're like writing or practicing or doing anything, I want to start the conversation and just ask, how was your day? How was your week? And my favorite question to ask you, which is, how is your headspace?
Headspace, a little bit scattered, but I'm okay. Yeah, recently I've just been having some thoughts about, like, again, the industry and this idea of, like, being in an industry that's very, like, validation heavy. And, like, I think it's been getting to me a lot recently. But I think having the awareness to, like, notice that that's been happening has been really helpful and useful, and, like, finding communities and, like, people such as yourself to, like, confide in about things like this has been really nice and helpful. But yeah, especially at the beginning of the year as well.
So true, because I feel like it sets the precedence, and so many creators I've talked to, it's almost as if, like, you know, we're restarting, this is the goal point, this is going to be the actionable year, this is going to be this is going to be goals, blah blah blah, and it is that sets the tone.
100%.
Well, since we're talking about start points and beginning points, I am intrigued to know, because this is, again, I feel like an exclusive, other than, yes, we know you've been on BBC, but I want to know, how has your beginning journey been, and how do you feel like it's going so far, and your thoughts overall on the industry as well, on creativity, actually? Yeah,
I've been quite fortunate in that sense. Do you want all of the beginnings, or where do you want? Okay, cool. Where do I start? So, went to uni initially at Nottingham, University of Nottingham, and they have, like, a student theatre there. And initially I came to study French and German because I went to a really, like, academic, like, Catholic school, and the expectation was, like, well, what I internalised as the expectation was, in order to be successful, you need to do something stable. So this is what you'll do. So I picked French and German because I did French as an A-level. I did German at GCSE and, like, enjoyed it. And so did the two together. But what I found is I spent more time in the student theater. So they had their own student theater. I think it's one of like the only like student run theaters in the UK. So they say, I'm not sure. But yeah, spent more time there, was in a pantomime. That was great. Got to play a guard.
Ooh, I don't know about this. Wait, what was the panto called?
So it was called Wishful Thinking, and it was a spin-off of what they tried to do was merge Cinderella and like Aladdin together and all of like the fairy tale tropes, just smudge it in one. And that was really fun.
Do you still have the script?
I think so on my Google Drive, you know.
Send it.
Okay. You have all my early drafts because I worked on it as a writer initially because that was always something I wanted to do. I was like just in the background, like I want to try this out. And then they had like a smaller like side role. And so me and my mate Marsha, big up Marsha, love her. We played guards one and two. I was guard two. You didn't see the singular tear that drooped down my face at the disclosure of that. But it was a great time. It really improved my confidence as well. So I started off there, and then I just got really like sucked into like the theatre culture. Met some really, really cool people. Yeah, started off there, and then after a year and a half of like struggling through French and German, and realised that I really wanted to like pursue playwriting after having written a script there. Yeah, just started applying to loads of like writing opportunities essentially. So the first one was Vault's New Writers and like Gularana, again, big shout out to Gularana Mir, who let me onto the course. Yeah, I did the Vault's New Writers program there. That was really fun. And then same time was growing into like looking at spoken word as well. And so I worked with Apples and Snakes on their like performance poetry program. That was really fun. Boosted my confidence a lot. I don't know. I feels like there's like a lot that's happened, but I'm like not even scratching the surface.
But you've done like a lot, and you've done like NYT. You've done Soho Writers Lab.
Yeah, we did Soho together. We were in the same buddy group, and what a group!
And everybody's like super thriving and working on their craft, which is just brilliant.
They are.
Yeah. Like when I was just doing Bunger Nation at the Rep, I saw Karina's play because she also did something there with Carly, and then Simon's play, your play. It's just so nice. And you know, when you're just like artist to artist, you're so just like, it just makes me happy whenever I see you and I see people in the community just thriving, and all of the artists that even I don't know whose work I admire. It just like, yeah, it makes me happy to see other people happy and just in their creative juice.
Exactly.
So I'm really intrigued to know, because you mentioned poetry, well, you mentioned spoken word, and I'm really always fascinated by it because I didn't know spoken word up until like maybe a couple of years ago. Like I knew poetry and lyricism because that is what I grew up on. And I am just intrigued how your connection to that came about, because whenever I've watched you and heard your work, there's such a deep connection for that. And I'm also intrigued to know where you are placed in your process today about the intersectionalities of poetry versus spoken word.
Ooh, that's such a good question. Wow, what a question. I think I came across, obviously we'd study like poetry at like GCSE and stuff, so I was like, oh, this is poetry, cool. But with spoken word, I think it was just like me going down a rabbit hole on YouTube. Like there's this like, there was this TV show in the US called Def Jam Poetry. I came across that. Lauryn Hill did a sick poem. I was like, oh, this is really cool. He Who Shall Not Be Named did a really cool poem to, you know, All Falls Down. Yeah, I don't know. I'm like, no, Kanye West went, oh, I missed the old Kanye. Yeah, he did like a spoken word version of All Falls Down, and my mind was blown. I was like, oh, this is cool. But yeah, I think it was just YouTube rabbit holes, and also the fact that like my dad was like a DJ back in day.
I don't know this.
Yeah, he was a DJ. Well, I don't know whether he was like DJ, like two decks, whatever. Yeah. It was more like when I was growing up, he used to have loads of parties and had like loads of like blank CDs and like would burn them in Windows like media player. And I just sit here there, like watch him like Sharpie pen all the songs that would be on it, put in the fades on Windows media player, that sort of thing. So music was just all around. So I guess it was just like different elements of things that drew me to a form that happened to be spoken word poetry. I don't think I ended up like seeking it out. It's almost like I stumbled upon it, that sort of thing. But I couldn't tell you the difference between poetry and spoken word because I feel like it exists in the bubble of poetry. It's just a different, strand. I don't know whether the distinction comes from this idea of like elitism or like paper poetry is superior, or the poetry that I grew up listening to was so-and-so poetry. So you can tell the lack of poetry from... but yeah, I don't know whether there's a distinction in that form, but yeah.
Wait, so your entire family is creative?
Yeah, so I found this out like very like recently, I guess. But yeah, my dad, I knew, was a DJ, or had been DJing and played music all the time when we were growing up. My mum, she's a shocker. She's a surprising one. So,
She's a barrister.
Nah, she works as a support worker for like homeless people. But she told me, like, when she was 14, you know, Battersea Arts Centre.
Yeah.
So my mum happened to be in a rap group, and they commissioned her in a rap group to do the storytelling interludes in an adaptation of a book of some sort. I literally got a text from her yesterday being like, make sure you go find that piece. Yeah.
You and I after this.
Yeah.
Yep. All I need is her name.
Of course, yeah.
Her full name.
Yeah.
Or the rap group, and we'll find it.
Oh, please do, man. Let's do it, man. Because I'm intrigued to see it, because she's the kind of person who's like, don't look at me, I'm not going off on stage, whatever.
Yeah.
So the fact that she like mic dropped this information to me was a bit like, you, maybe this stuff is inherited, who knows?
Isn't that interesting? Because I always wonder if our creative paths are something that's like inherently us, or like has been laid out, like kind of like that nature versus nurture thing.
100%, yeah.
And it really shows, sorry, in your musicality. And in the way that you perform, because it just feels so in you.
Oh, thank you.
Well, since we're talking about musicality and all of the components and playwriting, I'm intrigued to know then, balancing all of these and navigating through playwriting and storytelling, how is it that the world comes to you, and how is it that you create the world? Does it go characters first, visions? What is it that comes to you, and how do you go about it?
I think a lot of the time, I mean, more recently, it's been trying to look out for like ways that I can be playful and like joyful, because initially when I got into playwriting, all the stuff I was absorbing was like very like trauma focused, and as a result I was like, oh, I must write this way in order to be seen by producers and things and get onto programs. But I realized writing really sad stuff was having a mad like effect on my mental. And I like writing. I like writing for the sake of writing. But like the perceived outcome of me having to write something really traumatic was very like, very high stakes, very pressurizing, that sort of thing. And so the way I write is looking back at what makes me happy and what I enjoy. A lot of the time that is music. It's nostalgia. It's mind mapping those things and being like, how can I make this play the most Yasmin play? That it can be. And I guess the process is like making a lot of playlists, looking at a stimulus, breaking it down, having a little mind map and seeing how it relates to me, I guess.
So discussing storytelling and our connection to it, what is your favorite part of the job?
I think it's the freedom to express yourself like unapologetically, because I find but it's so true. Like, I feel like when I'm writing, it's like, this is the purest form of me that you'll get without me having to like mask or like put a barrier up. Sometimes that mask gets put back on when I show stuff to people, as you know.
To safeguard or protect. I completely get it.
Yeah, 100%. It's that unapologetically being yourself and then finding fellow creatives who are doing the same, or like read your work and like really like receive that and hold that. Because I think a lot of the time being an artist, it feels like you're going at it alone, but that's not necessarily the case. Mm. Especially when you find your people.
Yeah. It really is, yeah.
Have you found that? Like,
yeah, I really have. I think there's something about the industry which can make you feel quite alone or isolated a lot of the times, and to have perspectives of outside of you, because we're like, as artists, we are really intertwined with who we are, and it affects us emotionally. And I think, like, part of my search, part of my approach, part of a lot of things has been, where is that coming from? Where is the validity or the ego or the wantingness to explore or wanting to be a part of storytelling in so many various formats comes from? And yeah, it can feel alone or isolated a lot of the times, and you can go down a really dark rabbit hole. But I think it's part of my search. And at last year, I was really, really into that. And the year before that, but this year it's been more about like celebrating and embracing a lot of things and connecting with outside of you and really kind of like dig out of that, because it doesn't do any service. It really doesn't. You're not alone. The more I talk to people, the more people feel the same. Even the people at the top, a lot of the times they have their struggles amplified similar to ours. And it's not about a hierarchy system. It really isn't. We're all the same. We're all wanting the seat at the table. There's a lot of seats at the table, and now it's just about like, I want to be at that table too. I want to, you know, I'm going to be at that. We're equivalent, like so many things. And it's about part of being in the equation, and also understanding that success does not equate what the vision is sold to you as or what it is about. You really have to find what your own version of greatness, success, happiness, and all of those things are, because there really isn't. I don't know if you feel like there's like a lot of people like you. There's no blueprint for you. And even though there'll be people who might do the same thing, they don't come from the shared lived experience that you do. And the industry can compare you and can program certain things or can be like a tokenistic or like, this is the flavor of the season. But yeah, lots of thoughts there, lots of mumbles there. But yeah, that's I think like that's where my headspace is currently at, in wanting to be joyful, stand in my worth, and embrace a lot of things.
Yeah, it's like eliminating that scarcity mindset. I think, like, how I see it is like, there is this table, this metaphorical table, and like everyone has a seat at it. You just bring your own like ingredients, whatever, your own foods, whatever, and you create that. Or you can just fuck the table and create your own table elsewhere, you know what I mean?
Fuck the table. The table. Well, since we're talking about fucking the table up, I would like to know, what do you think? 3 things the industry could do with or without.
Oh, okay. I love how my brain was like, a do without. The gatekeeping. Bun that, we don't stop. I've been thinking about like the definition of like emerging and how that's a spectrum. Mm-hmm. That is very much a spectrum. And oftentimes people who are like emerging versus people who are established and put under the brackets of emerging, that can be very frustrating for both parties. Because like that emerging established person should basically just be established. And that emerging artist should have opportunities to be it. So like something to do with the phrasing around emerging and opportunities. Also, the under, because you were saying it, and I'm like, one day I'll be OG. the under 25 thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, you want more of it.
I want less of it. I want more openness, because you get so much, like, being in a... Having said that, I have, like, benefited from a lot of them.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it because you're no longer under 25?
No, I'm thinking future self, because I think being in groups, like, writers' groups with, like, people of different ages and experiences add so much more to the conversation, and it feels less like isolating in that sense, because you also have that peer who's like gone through it, has that experience. And sometimes writing isn't just about like writing right for writer's sake. It's like how your experience often informs like your practice and like who you are and what you want to say to the world. And sometimes we don't get enough of that. So yeah, that's my do withouts.
And it could do with?
I think more paid sustainable roles. Because we struggling out here. You're like, just doing all these opportunities, but also I've still got the temp job, still doing all these things to survive. Sustainability, financial sustainability in this industry, please. Please, just for the mental health, just for the sanity, just so I can do work, please. Because with that is that emphasis of self-care and the encouragement of that. I mean, I think it exists, and I'm pretty sure there's like a company that, an organization that's offering like therapy for like 15 quid for like theater makers or whatever. Mm. More emphasis on that, especially in an industry that feels so very unstable. And people knowing, specifically people of like from marginalized communities, that they can take up space in any way they want to. Mm. And that no matter how many or how few people see that, it's being seen and it's being recognized. Like, take up space, be joyful, be playful, because we need more of that. And I think when I was like getting into the industry, as it were, I don't feel like I'm in it, but yeah, it would have been so lovely to see that. So now I'm seeing more of that in different ways. Yeah, man, keep going. Let's start a revolution.
Yeah. Well, intrigued to know now how the piece came to be for you for Symphonies of Beaded Threads, which is an epic, as told by my grandma's photo album. The prompt, your initial thoughts to it, the envisioning of it, the process of it and everything.
Yeah, so the piece was inspired by, so I'm currently living at my grandma's house, wrote my piece when I was living at my grandma's house, and of my grandma, she's no longer with us, but she, I love it, she is what I call a memory hoarder. A memory hoarder of all the things. You open the cupboard and there's like VHSs and cassettes from like years ago, and you're like, shouldn't have you got rid of this? Like, you still have all this stuff. Anyway, but what's really special is that she also has like photo albums as well. And like when I used to go to my grandma's when I was younger, it was sort of like this ritual. Like we'd sit down, watch some daytime TV, and then one of us would like whip out the photo album. And we just flick through all these, like, memories of my grandma. Just, my grandma, ugh, stylish lady. You must give it to her. She was so stylish. Ugh, incredible. This woman, she used to go down, she would, my sister tells me the story of, like, how, my sister's, like, 13 years older than me. And she used to tell me the story of how, like, they would go and, like, buy cloth, go all the way to Cricklewood. Bear in mind, my grandma lived in Balham. That's however many buses. Yes. Southwest to Northwest, on a bus. So with those pictures stored all of these memories, and my grandma was such a good storyteller. I think storytelling runs in the family, because my auntie's a dramatic storyteller. My grandma, facial expressions, hand gestures, storyteller. My sister, Charlotte, when she tells a story, all the impressions, it's on, switched on, it's incredible. And being part of that, and seeing all these like memories through photos, I think really invoked the peace for me, especially living in the place in my grandma's house during COVID as well, when it was very lonely. And my grandma was in Ghana at the time. So I was just like home alone, flicking through these albums by myself, that sort of things. But yeah. And then also my grandma was like very religious as well. And so there's loads of like rosaries and like Bibles just like scattered everywhere. You open a drawer, there's a Bible, you're like, cool, I'm gonna close the drawer. I'm joking, I'm gonna read that Bible. But I need it. Look at me. But yeah, there's a lot of, I think nostalgia, living at my grandma's house, and like religion plays a big part, and storytelling in and of itself, and that culture and Ghanaian culture in general, I think played a big part in the creation of that piece.
Mm. Thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate that. I could just chat to you all day, but we gotta move on and let's play some quick responded questions. The first one being, what words of wisdom would you give to yourself if you looked in the mirror right now?
You are enough.
If you were a film, what would the original title of that film be? First thing that comes into your head.
Nothing.
It'll be called Nothing. Love it. Who would star in it?
Give me three actors that would star in it. Three actors that would star in my movie called Nothing. Why no name? Ryan Reynolds, why not?
plays the lead.
Huh? Imagine!
Give me the IMDb logline in 4, 3, 2, go!
There are some people sitting in the room. What are they doing?
Dum, dum, dum. Alright, quickly answer the next. If you were a drink, what would you be?
An appetizer.
If you were a food, what cuisine would you be?
A fried plantain.
If you were a fruit, what would you be?
An orange.
Why are you scared of these answers?
Because I don't know what's coming out my brain!
If you were a dessert, what would you be?
A Lotus Biscoff cheesecake. That I do know.
If you were a colour, what would you be?
Yellow.
If you were a clothing item,
Some Converses.
If you were a flower or a plant, what type of flower or plant would you be?
Geranium, because they smell nice.
If you were a smell, like a scent, what would be the three notes of those?
No, like musical notes.
No, like, you know how it's like vanilla, sandalwood, and blood.
Oh! Yeah. I already said geranium. I'm going to say geranium again. Lavender. And... Ooh, why is three such a big number? Yeah, mint. No. I have nothing in my brain!
Alright.
Well, my mic just got unhooked and I've just plugged it back in. I'll fix it in post-production. Alright, my last question to you is going to be, because we only have time for one more question because you gotta run off. So, everybody loves a rant. You love a rant. I love a rant. You get to rant for 30 seconds about anything or everything that you want. However, the condition is that you must start or end your rant with what the chai. So this is your 30 seconds. I'm going to put it on the timer. Yasmin, what the chai, go.
What the chai?
Bitch, don't fucking play with me. How dare you get rid of CITV, man? How dare you? Why did they do that? All the kids growing up are going to miss out on Horrid Henry if they're still playing that. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on a Saturday. I'm angry. I just feel like a staple core of society for all those people who can't afford Netflix and all these other things is just being removed. And I'm pissed.
What the
hell? They did. Is that getting rid of
Blue Peter?
Hundreds.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Well, to combat that, we do have to ask you this one question. I know that I said that was your last question, but this is your last question. I'm obsessed with joyfulness, as you know. So to combat this question, I'm intrigued to know, what is one thing you do for yourself that makes you feel joyful? And what's one thing you do for others that makes them feel joyful?
One thing I do for others, started making playlists for my friends with like song suggestions, which is really nice.
Can I have one, please?
You can have one. I'm not sure if you'd vibe with it.
Just
JoJo and Gwen Stefani. Oh, Gwen Stefani. I do love her, but also...
And what's one thing you do for yourself that makes you feel joyful?
One thing I do for myself is take myself out on walks, really. Exactly, you gotta hold your own hand and take yourself out for a walk. Get that fresh air. Great for the mental.
Well, everyone, that brings us to the end, and I hope you enjoyed that. I will put all of the information for the artist, the Patreon channel, in the descriptions of this episode, so make sure to check that out. This was part one of a two-parted episode. Make sure to keep an eye out, as part two will be coming out soon. Don't forget to share this, comment, do all of that juicy stuff. And as of now, I will leave you as I always do, which is breathe in and breathe out. Namaste, go. Which is copyrighted, and I will sue. See you next time. Stay curious.